Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Mr. Baba Elahi is a consultant ophthalmologist specializing in glaucoma and currently chief of surgery at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust. From medical student to divisional leader, he has combined clinical excellence with a passion for quality improvement, education, and system transformation, sharing insights from his journey to inspire the next generation of doctors. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast today. We've got a very exciting special guest with us. As usual, I am Victor, and with me is
Jaspreet.
And today, I think, without much further ado, I'll let him introduce himself.
So, thank you very much, both of you, PJ and Jaspreet, for Victor and Jaspreet for inviting me. I am Baba Elahi. I'm an eye surgeon. I work at Dudley Hospital. And I'm the current chief of surgery, women and children for the hospital as well. So that's my brief about professionally, but there is a lot more to me. So I'm here for you to ask me whatever.
Amazing. And I can't wait to dig a little bit into all of that, because I'm sure there's some exciting stories, stories in there. Brilliant. So chief of surgery, that isn't where it all started, is it?
No, I tell you, so I'm originally from Pakistan, and I studied in a military boarding school, a very high-end military boarding school for Pakistan for academics. So very disciplined life, so all my life. Then went to one of the very good medical colleges in Pakistan. And at that time, when I graduated in 1998, so a lot of my friends were going to US. So I think in a class of 220, was probably 100 plus had gone to US.
Wow.
So, and very few of us decided to come to UK. So why did I come to UK? Because I wanted to be an eye surgeon. I always wanted to be an eye surgeon from the day one from medical school. Maybe, wow, I might be lying, but maybe first year, second year, I was convinced I'm going to be an eye surgeon. I like doing eye. So it was more focused training in UK, and I love the title FRCS. So I wanted to make sure I end up being an FRCS. So I did my, and it wasn't coming to UK, the plan. Plan was FRCS and eyes. So I wrote to Royal College of Ophthalmologists for their opinion of where can I get the training. I didn't want to appear for PLAP exam and come here. So I've learned one thing in my life, and I can tell you and share with you, there's no shortcuts. Whenever I've tried to take one, it doesn't work. So just stick to the main, you know, it really helps that way. So I was thinking not to do PLAP, and I'll just do FRCS, and then that be it, and you can get training anywhere. So they gave me five options. Two were in Egypt, one was in Israel, and one was in India, and one was in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. So it narrowed down to, for me, taking that option or not from Pakistan, going to India to do a training wasn't a viable option. So I then wrote to the Malaysian hospital, and they offered me an interview. So I was their international trainee. So my journey in ophthalmology started in Malaysia, where I did my part one and of Royal College of Physician Surgeons of Glasgow's ophthalmology. Then I went back to Pakistan, finishing my training over there, and thought that would be the end of it. And, you know, I'll settle in Pakistan. But I then, plans changed. My wife needed to do some training as well. So we both decided, let's go and sit for PLAP. So the PLAP I was trying to avoid, I ended up doing it anyway. So you see, so there's no shortcut. So both of us gave PLAPs, and my wife started this after, you know, after my second son has gone to school. So she had a big gap. So both of us came here and started my first job as a SHO in Wakefield and Pinderfields Hospital and Clayton Hospital over there. Then I did some last post, I think it was called as last, you know, locum appointment of service for Leicester Royal Infirmary. And I was looking for a rotational kind of a training. So I was lucky to be part of the West Midland training, and I completed my training over there. Then, as I was always focused on ophthalmology, but I loved glaucoma and ophthalmology as well. It is a very surgical and it's very very surgery oriented kind of a specialty in ophthalmology. So when I finished my training at the rotation, so I had applied for one of a very good fellowship at Oxford. So they had 2 years waiting. So I got my fellowship post, but I had a gap in between. So I went for another fellowship in between. So I did a last year as TCS fellowship for glaucoma. We used to call it ASTO at that time, Advanced Specialist Training in Ophthalmology in Glaucoma. Then did 1 year of almost 9 months at Leicester Royal Infirmary, and then went to Oxford. And I was appointed from Oxford as a consultant. So I was the first ophthalmology consultant who was a West Midland trainee to come to Russell Hall Hospital. So that is my journey for coming here.
How many years did that take?
It takes a lot.
Hmm.
It took around, it does take a lot of time. Especially when you are an international medical graduate, you have to realize you. So I graduated in 1998 and went to Malaysia in 2001. So came to UK in 2005. And I got a consultant post in 2015.
Wow.
So you can imagine. So, you know, so this has been a lot. But as I was telling Victor, that effect, it's not, people think that it's going to take that long to become what you want to be. I think I like the part of me which was in Malaysia as well.
Mm-hmm. You like the journey.
The main thing is in medicine, the journey is more fun than the end, to be honest. You know, the destination is going to be there. That's why am I doing the chief of surgery role? Because I want the journey to continue. On a personal level, that's a journey which is continuing. You become a consultant, and then second year as a consultant, then thinking, next, well, now what? So what do I do next? So I became the guardian of safe working for the hospital. So then became the chair of the guardian for West Midlands, and then part of the National Guardian team, etc. Then what? So then I started a totally different route. I started on the management side of things, started as a clinical director for trauma orthopedics and specialist surgery. But I had a bad habit of, going into other areas and domains and just going beyond my areas of which are under, you know, it comes in. So just a curiosity kind of a thing to learn more. So then I took over the children's services. I was asked to look after the children's services. Then opportunity came in as a deputy chief of surgery. So I went for the deputy chief of surgery. And then I was thinking it would be 2-3 years as a deputy chief, but the chief decided to step down. So I ended up with taking up the chief of surgery, and was very fortunate in this hospital to be, you know, to given that opportunity. And so yesterday I had another interview, and this is my start. Today is the start of my second tenure, as it officially will start on the 1st of April. But I'm doing this. So, but I'm still on that journey.
Mm.
I think there's a lot of fun in the journey. So I had a great time in Malaysia. You know, moved around all Malaysian borders and Singapore and Thailand. I've done all of that. came here, went through rotation, different cultures, different people. So this is the fun part of medicine. So that's why sometimes we international medical graduates enjoy a little bit more than we can have an opportunity. Maybe, you know, if I would have gone to America, there's another way of, you know, enjoying that. So it all depends.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of a journey.
I think that's a very important point for our resident doctors to enjoy the journey.
Yeah. You don't want to just get too fixated on
the end.
The end.
And, you know, and because you people are so focused on it that I just wanted to finish. Then what? And you become a GP and then you have a you know, routine of going in and out and in and out. So what are you going to do that? So there should be. So I purposefully deferred my consultant appointment for a year because I was going to enjoy my fellowship. When was I going to get an opportunity to go to Oxford and do a fellowship program? So why compromise that for just, you know, taking a consultant post 1 year earlier? It wasn't. So I realized, so I really enjoyed it.
And you must have like learned a lot from like your Oxford fellowship as well.
Yes, I did. I think you can imagine there were 14 candidates for one post. So the glaucoma fellowship that I did was, there are different fellowships in UK for glaucoma. So in Moorfield, I believe there are 32 fellows in 2 years, 16 in 1 year and 16 in year two. In Oxford, there's one. So an Oxford fellow in our times was, as per the Oxford principle of teaching, is one-to-one. So it was one-to-one. So I was with the consultant all the time who wrote books. And, you know, we have a club, his fellows club. So there we are very few, but we are John Simmons fellows. So everybody knows us. But basically that was also a good experience. And it taught me a lot in what I am, rather than just not being an eye surgeon or a glaucoma specialist, but being what as a personality, you know, how you carry yourself, how you talk, how you speak, and your mannerisms, and how you behave with your patients. And what I wanted to do was bring those Oxford manners and the way you to the people of Dudley.
Yeah.
And I love people of Dudley, to be honest. I tell that to all my residents. You can't find a better cohort of patients who are so thankful. Literally, they are. This population is so thankful for what we do. And so this is, so you can imagine, I live in Leicester. When I started my training, my wife was a Leicester trainee, so she did her foundation year to become a GP in Leicester. So still live in Leicester. And there are, Leicester Royal Infirmary is 2 miles down my house.
Wow.
But I wake up and I come here because I love coming to Dudley.
Wow.
Because Dudley is my work home. And so there's no, so I've never even thought about applying for any other post anywhere. So it's been, you know, Dudley for my ophthalmology.
I think it's important because you want to wake up and want to come to work rather than, ugh, another day.
Yeah.
And
I got your point, and I tell you, I'll just add one thing. So as a chief of surgery, or as a, you know, in this role, what I try to do is those who are working with me should wake up in the morning and feel good to come to work. If I could deliver that, I don't need to deliver anything. To be honest, there's a lot of talks about how we deliver well-being, etc. That's the best way of delivering well-being. If you have that mindset that everybody should be, you know, happy to come to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Create the environment that makes you want to, yeah. And everything plays a part in that, isn't it?
You can go into any specialty and want to just finish it. But you still have to wake up and go to work.
Yeah. Honestly, and I think it's a huge topic at the moment as well, you know, with training becoming increasingly difficult to get for a lot of people. Sometimes there are setbacks in your journey as well. But I think it's just as you said, it's really important, because one beautiful thing about medicine and surgery is that no experience is ever really wasted experience. Everything is always adding in one way or the other, making you a better doctor in one way or the or the other. So really taking time to explore your opportunities and saying yes to new things that will build you professionally, I think is so good.
You're so right, and you're so correct in all of this, because, you know, when I was a trainee, I wouldn't mind seeing one or two extra patients. Because I had this mindset that this patient that I'm going to see now, I might not see this patient, this pathology again. So, you know, that's my opportunity. You can learn a lot of things in books, but that pathology in front of you, nobody's going to take away from you. So especially when you're going for exams and etc., that's the key. There's a lot of knowledge in the books. There's a lot of online resources, etc., etc. But actual knowledge is right in front of you, that hands-on. And if you do that one, you know. So ophthalmology is very interesting, because ophthalmology is only one specialty where you're a surgeon as well as a physician. Because it has a very mix of both. So it gives you, because I could be dealing with a lot of systemic diseases like diabetes kind of issues that come, their complication. Rheumatology, we have a very close link of working with. And so it works with a lot of specialities. So rheumatology also for uveitis, etc. And similarly for glaucoma, you have other systemic conditions. So you need to have good systemic understanding of medicine. So my final FRCS exam had an exam on medicine. So, you know, they, apart from ophthalmology, surgical part of it, I had a proper medical, because that's what was expected. And then you become a surgeon and you enjoy the surgery. And not only you enjoy the surgery, you enjoy it too. If you were that mindset who likes to have some toys, that's the specialty to be. You know, we're talking about robots now here in robotic surgery. Ophthalmology is that level many, many years ago, you know. So wow. Microsurgery, phaco machines, laser hair, everybody's doing a laser for different stuff. And so many equipments to play with, you know, diagnostic-wise. So it's a very exciting specialty which has a lot of new equipment coming. So ophthalmology that I was doing as a year one or two trainee back in Malaysia, I think is almost obsolete now. It's a total different ophthalmology.
It's changed so much.
So that's the beauty of this specialty. So it keeps you excited.
Yeah.
So if you like to have a journey, ophthalmology is the specialty to be, because it really, it's good one for work-life balance. If you want, you know, if you don't over want to do things, but that's, ophthalmology is a very good specialty. But it's also very good for learning, and especially around if you have appetite for surgery as well as medicine, and if you are confused in between, and if you want best of both worlds. So that's where it will come. Ophthalmology would give you both of those.
So I know you've enjoyed your journey a lot. Were there any obstacles at all, or like setbacks?
Was it all smooth sailing?
You must have had one point where it's like, I don't know.
Oh, I had many setbacks. So when I was going for my, it's not a setback, as I said. So when I was going for my fellowship exam, I think at that time, I could have completed all of that in Malaysia. But I decided, oh, I don't need to. So I'll, rather than come out of the training program, this, I was there for a certain time, I just need to come out and then I can go and apply for it. And if I would have done that, then I wouldn't have needed to do the PLAP. So that was one setback that I thought I had. But no regrets, because I did a PLAP, so I was never going to be in a sponsorship program or anything. I could go and take a job anywhere. So that was one thing. But yes, on the whole, training it's not easy for any resident doctor feels that, you know, their time is difficult. It's the same for all of us, have been difficult time. But the good thing about being a resident doctor, and especially on rotation, you can see light at the end of the tunnel. So I used to hate one particular rotation, and I would think, when would that finish? I'm not going to name it.
What was it?
I can tell you it wasn't in Russell Hall because I never came here as a trainee. I worked here, but it was in a neighboring trust. So I thought, my God, when will this finish? And I used to count days, you know, when this would come to an end. So these were setbacks that you have. And you have some setbacks when you are, you know, in your as a consultant as well. So when you are a consultant, you feel like you can change the world in one go. And I think there is a big gap in our training. So, and I'm not saying it's a big gap in training in UK, it's all over the world. So especially, so you become a consultant and you think you know everything. Yes, you know everything about the patient, but you do not know anything about the whole management of NHS, how NHS works. You know, part of your training will tell you, yeah, this is the rotation. There's a limited part of it, but the nitty-gritty of getting your things done, it takes a while. So it's on-the-job learning for a consultant. A lot of it is on the job. But you could learn a lot of things. I personally think there should be more structured leadership programs in the training. So people should be allowed to finish their foundation years and take a year in leadership, or they're doing their third year and fourth year. And rather, you know, we go into research, they should come out and do a leadership module for a year. So shadowing different medical leaders in different organizations, that would create a whole, you know, generation of medical leaders who could live up to the expectation that we would have in the future.
Do you think that should be like a mandatory thing to do?
No, but I would, if you mandate something like this, then people get put off.
Yeah.
It should be, so it's like, PhD is not mandatory, but people go and do that, you know, in their year three, year four.
Yeah.
So, because they would like to take their academic path.
Yeah.
Pathway. So, similarly, it should be a module available. It should be a paid module.
That's yes, what I'm saying. That's the option, but also someone should sponsor it.
Yes, it should be. So, shouldn't be on the resident doctor to take it on itself. But it should be like an apprenticeship program should be there. So you are an apprentice to the chief of surgery, you are apprentice to the medical director or anybody else like that, only deputy medical director or medical examiner or chief clinical information officer. So in the future, you could be. I heard they were doing some of these programs, but it's not so, you know, well advertised. And it's not generic that everybody should be available to. You want to do a PhD, you know, I can go to A, B, C, D. These are the universities. These are the topics. I could work around it and then you can work yourself. But there's nothing for leadership. And I think that will help. And that also becomes a part of the journey. Something exciting to do. Yeah, I've done 3-4 years of training here and now taken a year off doing a totally different role.
Yeah.
Then I can come back and complete the rest of the training. So.
Because it sort of gives you like a little mini look into what your life is going to be after you finish your training.
It's about that preparation, isn't it? So like as a medical student, you're being prepared for your, you know, very junior F1, F2 years. And then in that training, you're being prepared to become an SHO. And as an SHO, being prepared to become a registrar. But, you know, having those leadership skills earlier on, rather than you just now getting to that position and then all of a sudden...
Because when you're in fellowship, you're still under a consultant. But what happens when you become a consultant? There's no one to guide you.
Yeah.
So it's good to have like these leadership courses.
You said that, you know, SHO to registrar to next level or fellow, or foundation year. In all of these, there is a level of supervision that you are going to offer somebody. But you still remain in that umbrella of a consultant cover. The transition that you have on the very first day when buck stops with you as a consultant, even if you're the senior registrar, I think the senior registrar level is when we used, in, for instance, when I was doing my fellowship in Oxford, I could do anything, but I knew that I had an umbrella of my supervisor, my consultant. The first day at Russell Hall was, there's me.
Different story.
So it is me. It's nobody else. Nobody's going to take responsibility for my actions.
Like, where's the help?
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the big. So that you could get prepared for those because you can have role models to look at. But you could be a trainee at City Hospital and get a job down in London. So you might know nobody when you turn up on the first day. You know, it could happen that you get to know new people around it. And then at the same time, have that level of responsibilities. And that is a serious responsibility because everything is on you as a, you know, to make a decision. So that transition, I think, rather than just being a role of clinical know-how of transition, of a complete role should be there and should be offered in training some way or another. We don't do that a lot.
And is that something that you're kind of more passionate about in your trainee?
I honestly, I had a ophthalmology trainee and I did a little bit of mentorship for him and I just wanted him to take, you know, I was a clinical director at that time and I was supporting him and he used to shadow me in some of the meetings on men so to understand. And I'm pretty sure he will do very well. So I think he's got a consultant job somewhere.
Oh,
but he'll
brilliant.
Do very well as a not only as a consultant, but he's a future medical leader.
Okay.
I think we need to do that. We do that now a lot. I've established a mentorship program. So I wanted, when the new consultants come in, so I knew that problem. And especially when there are a lot of people who take a locum consultant post, becoming a consultant. I never did any locum post. So I just took my fellowship finished, and then I started as a consultant and a substantive consultant. So sometimes people transition in between with that. That could help them. But I'm not sure that is a, you know, right way to do it. So I had that gap that I felt. So I started this mentorship program. But I do it very interestingly. So I put a pediatrician with an orthopedic surgeon.
Oh.
That's a, you know, so that's how you...
I want to see that conversation.
Yeah, but this is a different skill set and how they interact with each other. I could mix, this kind of a mixing is what is required. I could have an orthopedic surgeon being mentored by a physician somewhere. So, you know, basically one of the physician colleagues. Because... you'll get a little bit of a mentorship from your own peers in the department. But that's not the real mentorship. You need to create consultants. And that's where I think you could do that.
Yeah. Wow.
Because every other department, like, I think you can humble each other on how their department works and communication skills differ a lot.
Yes. They all talk a different language, I can tell you. So the way, it's, you know, they're different all, they're professionally what I mean to say. So if you are, there's the surgeon's talk, there's an anesthetist talk, there is a pediatrician's talk, and then there is a gynecologist or ED, you know.
Yeah.
So then you could have acute medicine would talk a different to some of the elective working specialties. So this is because they have a different mindset. So mixing them together to understand each other's role is also very important. So then you build, you know, that builds a whole into whole of a consultant. But on the whole, I think that's what I did personally, where in my capacity, what I could do was create a mentorship program for new consultants. So at least it helps them settle in a bit better.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's the first time I've actually pictured it that way as you've laid it out, and you're very right. It's a different kind of transition from what you experience at each level coming up to now get to that final level where it is you.
So I had a good mentor here because it was not the program wasn't going on as it was, but when I came in, I had a vascular surgeon as my mentor. And that was a very good mentorship, to be honest, because he had no conflict in guiding me things. He was giving me a very honest advice how I settle in and how I do a lot of things and, you know, private practice, etc., how you negotiate your PAs and your work life, all of this was very important. So I found that was helpful to me.
You were not joking when you said it's a very interesting story. If you had to like break it down into, I guess, a few pointers for our resident doctors who might be listening to the podcast about things you've learned over the years and getting to where you are now, what
main points?
If I was to give 2-3 main points from my own personal experience, not from any other thing. I think when I was there, I spent a lot of time as a West Midlands City Hospital. So City Hospital had a good mess for doctors. I don't know if still has it or not. So we used to stay there, residence upstairs, and then you have a mess there. Try to come out of your silos and meet people from other specialties. Because this is the same person you will be looking to refer that medical register patient. It's the same patient that you would like to have an opinion on. Do not just sit yourself when you are, because we like to keep ourselves to certain areas. Develop your contacts and relationships, professional relationships while you're here. So then this communication that you have from when an ED doctor wants to talk to a medical reg or a surgical reg, they should be in good terms with each other anyway. They should be on first name terms in any way because they're working in the same hospital. So this is a useful tip because it makes your life very easy. Because at the end of the day, you will provide a very good care for the patient because you are not, you know, not debating on what is right for the department and should this pathway and that pathway. Just find out what is the best for the patient. Where do I send this patient? Can you look after this patient? So I think, and when you are dealing with your colleagues and other specialties, be gentle to them and, you know, professionally how you present, because it would come back to bite you at some point. So that's what I would say. So, and also remember that it's very important when you're working in as a doctor. This also, when I said remove your fences around different specialty, but also around professional boundaries a little bit, you know, have a very good working relationship with the nurses. I have been taught a lot by my nurses. You know, when I was doing surgery, a lot of advice would come, you know, don't hold it like this and hold it like. So because they're doing it day in, day out. So anybody who can teach you anything from any point of view, take that as an advantage. And you should enjoy the time you're having here and have more fun in your job, you know. When it finishes, then you have responsibility, a lot of responsibility. Currently, you have work, but not that level of end responsibility. So I think enjoy, that's what I would say personally. So
wow.
Be in positive mode all the time. You know?
Yeah, that's great. That is great.
We're at the end of our podcast. So I think the main thing is enjoy the journey.
Yeah. Enjoy the journey. Your professional relationships with your colleagues and outside of your specialty really matter. And then, yeah, have the mindset of kind of growth and taking advice from where it might come. And yeah, enjoy the journey. I think I'm definitely going to go away with. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
It was a very interesting.
Very, very interesting conversation. We look forward to the next one. As usual, interact with us, interact on our different platforms. And if you'd like to appear on the podcast, also feel free to get in touch with us on any of the platforms. And we'll leave on that note. Till the next one.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.